Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, if you happen to be listening to this, and if you are, I apologize because your parents have failed you on a deeply profound level. Unless, of course, you're an infant and for whatever reason the sound of my voice puts you to sleep, in which case, party on. I'm glad your parents found something that will put you to sleep, because when you find that, you grab onto it and you do not let go. This is the 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show, your weekly look into the wide, wacky, wonderful world of mixed martial arts. I'm your host, Robert Winfrey, and boy, did we have some of all of that leading up to UFC 203. I have just, man, what a crazy, not just card, but, I mean, the card itself was pretty good. A little bit crazy, both the good and the bad. But just the events surrounding this particular card were a little bit crazy, just a little bit weird. Some outside-the-cage shenanigans as the event unfolded, some inside-the-cage shenanigans. It was just one of those bizarre events that, you know, years from now, when you tell the story about this event or you look it up historically, it's just, you're going to think about it and it's just not going to make sense. Like, really? The elevator crashed and cost us a fight? But yes. Yes, it did. I'll be getting into all of that before we get into UFC 203. Also on the card tonight, we will be... I say we. It's actually just me. Jeff Harris had a last-minute schedule change. He might be calling in very briefly with some of his thoughts, but depending on whether or not he gets the time to, because, again, he's working, last-minute schedule change. He'll be back next week, so for fans of Jeff, next week he'll be back with us per usual. I will be previewing UFC Fight Night 94, which comes to the world next Saturday and has a pretty good main event. The rest of the card, not so much, but we'll get to that. Anyway, to anyone else out there, if you would like to call in, this show takes live callers. I'm quite happy to do so. At 323-657-0901. Once again, 323-657-0901. If you would like to call in using Skype, I'm not sure it'll work. But there is still a Skype icon on the Blog Talk Radio player page, and that means you're more than welcome to try. Skype and Blog Talk have a very contentious relationship. So it might not work, but again, you're welcome to try if you'd like to. That particular icon on the Blog Talk Radio player page is at the top of the player, off-center to the right. Click on it. Some dialog boxes are going to open up that you have to click through and respond to. Once you get done with that, it will bring you up, and if it goes through appropriately, and that's a big if. But if it does, you will come up in my switchboard. I'm happy to take your call. You can get your questions and your comments out on the air, and I'm more than happy to respond to them. All right, UFC 203. Now, before I get into the actual fights, there's a few things that need to be touched on. One, if you did not listen to last week's show, we talked about some of the fights on this card had been shifted, had been monkeyed with because of injuries or visa issues. We had a whole fight fall through due to visa issues, a fight between Yusuke Kasuya and Demir Hadzevich that got moved to, I believe, the upcoming event between Lamas and Penn. Yes. I believe last week we had just been informed that a flyweight fight between Ray Borg and Ian McCall had been called off after Ray Borg got sick, which sucks. I was really looking forward to that fight. I'm a big fan of Ray Borg, and I just, you know, Ian McCall, the poor guy. He was supposed to fight Justin Scoggins. That fight fell apart the week of the event because Scoggins wasn't going to make weight and suffered some health complications pertaining to the weight-cutting process. Scoggins moving up to bantamweight. Supposed to fight Ray Borg. Ray Borg gets too sick to compete, apparently, you know, on the 7th. So, yeah, very close to the week of. Actually, the week of. Jeez. Yeah, my math is good. And that fight falls through. And I was really looking forward to that fight. And nope. Feel bad for Ian McCall, man. Dude just wants to fight. Apparently, there's rumor that he and Neil Seary will be squaring up for the upcoming UFC event in Belfast. Which I'm all for. He and Neil Seary will have a pretty good scrap. But the day before the event, a weird thing happened at the hotel where a bunch of the fighters were staying. I believe it was a Wyndham Hotel. The elevator, and apparently there was only one working elevator. That's kind of what I had heard about this, so feel free to double fact check me, guys. I am not claiming this to be gospel. But in the elevator, and several of these individuals posted videos of this on various social media outlets, Twitter, Instagram, things of that nature. The elevator, which at the time had Brad Tavares, Uriah Faber, Fabricio Werdum, CB Dalloway, and a couple of other people in it, had some kind of mechanical issue. I don't know if the cable snapped. I don't know. I don't know the details. The elevator broke, dropped about a floor, possibly a floor and a half, to the basement, where it landed. No one was seriously hurt based on what, again, they all walked away. So, you know, very glad about that. But CB Dalloway did sustain some kind of injury. To the best of my, I don't believe it's been disclosed. Just, yeah, an injury related to riding a faulty elevator. And Dalloway was unable to make the event. So the day of UFC 203, he had to pull out because of some kind of injury pertaining to this. I don't know what it was. That hasn't been disclosed. I mean, again, the co-main event got changed around. Mirbek Taisimov couldn't make it due to visa issues. The Kasuya and Hadzovic fight got postponed due to visa issues. Ray Borg, the week of, gets too sick to fight. And then the day of, CB Dalloway has to pull out of a fight. It's insanity. I mean, that's an insane series of events. It's just... I mean, come on. Now, I know a little about the mechanics of elevators. Not a lot. I know a little. If they fell that far, I'm surprised that the emergency brakes didn't lock in. Elevators have emergency brakes independent from the cables on the top and the bottom that, you know, are used to pull them up and down. And those should have activated. Now, it might be an issue of distance where emergency brakes like that will only activate if you fall more than X number of feet, and they didn't fall that far, so they never activated. But it's just weird. I mean, that whole situation was weird. And the night of fights, there were some good fights, but that level of kind of bizarreness really permeated the event, including the main event. Let's go ahead and jump into this. Stipe Miocic defeated Alistair Overeem via knockout in the first round. This was, the fight went a little over 4 minutes. This was a pretty crazy round. Overeem did a good job of circling early. He cracked Stipe with a left, dropped him, tried to grab a guillotine choke. Overeem has a very good guillotine. Miocic survived. They got back to their feet. They both landed. They both hurt each other. Overeem just couldn't really deal with the pressure of Miocic. Miocic didn't chase him. He did a good job of cutting him off as opposed to just following him. Because you follow a guy like Overeem, he's probably setting you up for a counterattack. They both landed. They both got rocked at different points in the fight. Then towards the end, Overeem landed, I believe, a kick to the leg. Miocic caught it, tripped him, got on top in his guard, and just unloaded right, just punches to the jaw until Overeem went out. And Overeem was out for a while. This was not a flash knockout. He was out for just until like before they read the official time and, you know, did the whole ceremony with you raising the arms. He was out for a while. That was pretty violent. It was, again, it was only 4 minutes and change, but for a top-level heavyweight fight, this was pretty good. I know Overeem got a little bit of slack for some of the way he was circling, kind of not turning completely his back on his opponent, but mostly, and then kind of jogging to reset. I understand that doesn't look very good. It's also not a very uncommon technique. If you watch a lot of high-level boxing and kickboxing, it's not uncommon for guys to, if they're being really pressured, to kind of do that little jog to reset and get the distance back. It's not the, again, it doesn't look very good, but it's a perfectly valid method for reestablishing distance. I don't consider it the same as actually turning and running. I've seen that too, and I find a difference there. If you don't, that's fine and dandy. I'm not here to tell you you're wrong. But it was a really good 4-minute fight. There were some pretty good momentum swings. Miocic is tough, man. Again, he got cracked and then nearly submitted might be a bit of a stretch. I don't think the choke was that close. But again, Overeem's got a very, very good guillotine choke, so it might have been closer than it looked. But he got out of it, kept his composure. Stipe Miocic is a stud, man. Not a whole lot else you can say about that guy. Good cardio, good wrestling, good boxing. Knows how to fight going forward, knows how to fight going backward. He's a stud. I mean, I imagine his next fight will be with Cain Velasquez, and that'll be interesting. It'll be very interesting. To kind of continue a little bit of the craziness of this whole night, after the loss, Overeem claimed that Miocic tapped to the guillotine choke. Now, two things about this. Three. One, on video replay, there did not appear to be a tap from Miocic at all. There was a brief sequence when he was fighting the grip of Overeem that I thought, I can understand why you might have thought you felt a tap. It wasn't. If he's just saying that he thought he felt the submission, the way Stipe gets his hands up to fight the grip, I can kind of see where he might have felt that. And three, he just got knocked out. Now, and look, we're not talking a worn down stoppage. We're not talking an early stoppage. We're talking violently separated from his consciousness. He's probably not going to remember the fight all that clearly. So I'm giving the guy a little bit of credit there, but, historically Overeem's had some excuses for losses. So, if you guys don't have the patience for his excuses, I completely understand. I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt more because he was, again, unconscious for close to a minute. I'll give him a little bit of, maybe he's misremembering things at that point. But, again, a really good fight. I'm looking forward to Velasquez and Miocic, and I'll be honest, guys, I like Stipe's chances. The guy knows how to fight moving backwards. That's a pretty big deal against Cain. Cain doesn't fight well going backwards. He has to come forwards, and if you can meet that aggression effectively, Fabricio Werdum did, capitalize on his stiff head movement with good straight punches, not be afraid to fight him in the clinch. The primary difference there is Stipe does not have nearly the Brazilian jiu-jitsu game of Fabricio Werdum, so Velasquez will probably be looking to take him down more. But Stipe is a very good wrestler. It'll create an interesting clash. I like Stipe's chances, though. I'll just say it like that. I really do. He's very good. As for Overeem, I don't know. I don't know. A third fight, because he and Fabricio Werdum have fought twice. A third fight with Werdum is an option. But other than that, he's fought a lot of those top guys. I wouldn't hate him and Josh Barnett. I'll throw that out there. I wouldn't hate him fighting Josh Barnett. A rematch with Werdum is possible. But, I mean, he already lost to Ben Rothwell. He knocked out JDS. Assuming Velasquez is fighting for the belt, if they don't go with Velasquez for a title fight, Velasquez and Overeem I'd be okay with that. But he's in an odd position in that he's just fought a lot of guys that are currently ranked, and finding fresh matchups for him is a little bit difficult, and even a lot of the rematches aren't all that compelling. He and Brown would be an interesting rematch, just because Brown has fallen off so hard since that fight. But we'll get to Travis Brown in a second here. But, you know, a good fight to close the night on, and look, having Stipe defend that belt for the first time in his hometown, Cleveland came unglued for that guy. That was one of the most raucous ovations I have ever heard for an American fighter in America. I mean, you get, you know, the Irish who and Conor McGregor, that was insane. A few of the Brazilians in Brazil will get massive reactions like that, but you don't get a whole lot of that from the American side. And that Stipe came off like an absolute star with the way the fan base and the live crowd reacted to him. So, smart decision making. Also, fun fact: Stipe broke a not irrelevant trend for UFC champions last night. Prior to last night, no UFC champion had ever successfully defended their title in their hometown if that was their first title defense. Now, that's not something the UFC does often, having guys with their first title defense in or immediately around their either hometown or base of training operations, something like that. But the few times it has happened, they've lost. I mean, most recently, Luke Rockhold, who got knocked out by Michael Bisping, very close to his training base in San Diego. It's just he just was the first guy to really kind of break that trend, and not an insignificant one. Michael Bisping is going to try and do it as well later when he takes on Dan Henderson in Manchester. All right, first caller of the night. I believe this is Jeff calling in. Area code 818. You are on the air. What do you got to say?
Hello, Robert. It is, in fact, Jeffrey. Sorry I can't stay on for the whole time tonight. Just wanted to come in and give my brief thoughts on the event last night. I'm proud of CM Punk. As a fan of CM Punk, I'm glad he made the walk, which you doubted and decried that he would ever do. He did it. He got it. He got his fight. He got his ass whooped. That's it. I never want to see it happen again. It should not be allowed to happen again. And if I was AJ Lee, I would tell her husband, either you never fight again or I can't be with you anymore. Like, just like the Jon Favreau episode of Friends, where he decides, I'm a tech billionaire, but I want to become the UFC champion, so I'm going to fight in UFC. I'm going to get my ass kicked every fight. He was dating Monica at the time, and then Monica was like, that's enough. I can't see you if you're going to keep doing this. So you should all watch that episode if you have the chance, because it has Tank Abbott and Bruce Buffer playing himself.
Yes, I remember that episode.
Also, completely disgusted with just that whole scene with Edmund Tarverdian and Fabricio Werdum. There's no excuse on either side for that behavior. I'm surprised Dana White was so mellow about it last night. Tarverdian, he should have his corner license revoked. Verdum should definitely be fined and suspended for that ruckus, and I hope that happens. Joe Rogan calling for changes on interviewing fighters after they get knocked out, but I don't know. I'm fine with him putting Alistair over him on the spot because I think it's pretty clear there was no tap out by Stipe Miocic. And it's par for, I mean, are we really surprised that Overeem would do something like that? Does that really surprise you, Robert?
Nah, not really.
Quite frankly, I think justice was served by Overeem putting him in his place like that. I don't see I can understand Overeem Rogan feeling bad for Overeem and feeling like they should change it. Well, you know, and that's fine, but I don't think he did anything wrong by exposing the fact, dude, there were no freaking tap-outs by Miocic in that fight. Here's one thing I'll say for Overeem, though. That punch that put Miocic down, what would you call that? Was it, would that be a jab, or was that like an overhand left?
That was more of an overhand left. He was in the southpaw stance, kind of in transition.
Is that not like the first like overhand left that Overeem has ever landed in his career?
No, not at all. He's that was the same type of punch he knocked out Junior Dos Santos with, was
really?
That left. Yeah, was probably the straightest I've seen him throw it in a long time, but it's the same basic punch.
That was like the straightest looking punch I've ever seen from him, and it was effective. I just don't get why. I feel like he would have more effectiveness. He would have more success in his game if he started adapting and throwing straight punches, because we know he has power, but he tends to only throw, like, swinging, looping punches. And that punch almost won him the fight. Now, hindsight, maybe he should have gone for ground and pound instead of guillotine, but, you know, I mean, that's the fight game there. But, one thing I thought Miocic was being very sloppy in that fight. I don't know how you feel. I think he was being way too reckless with his defense, and his head was wide open the whole time. So it's no wonder Overeem was able to almost catch him. What did you think of that, Robert?
Miocic is a very upright boxer, and that has pros and cons. One of the cons being your head's a little bit easier to tag, especially before you get a feel for distance and timing. Once he got a feel for the range from Overeem, he did a much better job of not being hit as much. But until you get that down, the way he – just kind of his general style, it's a bit of a – you do run that risk, especially early in a fight.
All right. Well, Fabrizio Verdum, you get no title shot next. You've not done anything to earn a title shot. You never defended your belt, and you lost it on your first defense. Go ahead and book Cain Velasquez versus Stipe. But that, you know, that is a big if, considering we need Cain to stay healthy and actually make it through a training camp for once in order to take that fight. But I'd be fine with that fight. How do you feel?
I'm fine with that. And if Cain falls through, I don't hate a rematch between Stipe and JDS.
You know, that would be fine as well, because JDS did have a good win over M. Rothwell. He has that win over Stipe, so that, you know, Stipe would probably want to get that win, back. And but you're tempting fate there for another match in the Cain Velasquez Junior Dos Santos series, if you're really okay with that, Robert, because you seemed exhausted with it by the time they had their last fight.
Well, that's because they had three fights in the space of like less than 2 years.
All right.
Anyone who also, much as I love Junior, I don't think he beat Stipe in a rematch. I mean, their first fight was close enough that a lot of people scored it for Miocic, and Stipe's gotten better, and I think it's safe to say that some of the damage and the miles have started to catch up with Junior at this point.
All right, well, that's all I really have for this week, Robert, so I can't stay on longer, but looking forward to listening to the rest of the show, and have a great one.
You too, Jeff. I'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
All right. That was Jeff. Again, he'll be back next week. Just last minute schedule change this week forced him to not be able to participate in the entire show. If you have any thoughts, questions, comments you want to get on the air, I'll plug the call-in information one more time before I move on to the co-main event. You can call in at 323-657-0901. Once again, 323-657-0901. All right, in the co-main event, Fabricio Verdum defeated Travis Brown via unanimous decision. Boy, was this fight not good. This fight opened up with Fabricio Verdum landing a flying sidekick to the face of Travis Brown. As soon as that landed, I knew, and it didn't finish it. Like, it's all downhill. There's no way they're going to top that. And these are heavyweights, so it's going to get ugly fast. Verdum had an exceptional first round. He, again, a very good first round. He was able to consistently outland Travis Brown. He dropped him towards the end. He got his back. I mean, if he gets his back 30 seconds earlier in that fight, I think he chokes him out. Verdum's jiu-jitsu game is superb. But, you know, timing being what it was, and Travis Brown did a pretty good job of defending for the time that he had to survive, then things just got worse. Verdum slowed down, and Travis Brown... You see, I actually got into a discussion on Twitter with a follower that he brought up and I think I talked about this a little bit last week. He brought up the question of, you know, was Travis Brown ever that good? And in one sense, yes. I mean, he had a couple of very impressive wins. I mean, look, Gonzaga's not great, but the way he beat him was impressive. His finish of Josh Barnett was very impressive. He had some very good performances. He, you know, kind of looked like a heavyweight on the up and up, on, you know, coming up in the world. Then he lost to Fabricio Verdum. He changed camps, and I'm going to save some, because Jeff alluded to some of the discussion, you know, the incident between Edmund Tarverdian and Fabricio Verdum. I have some words about Edmund Tarverdian I want to reserve until we get to that point. But since he joined the Glendale Fight Club, he has not looked good. Even his wins. With them, he's beaten Brendan Schaub and Matt Mitrione, I believe. They weren't good wins. I mean, he didn't look good. And he's lost to, you know, Andre Arlovsky. He lost, you know, here to Verdum, and he had one other. I'm going to look it up now because I want to be accurate about this. He lost to Verdum. The Cain Velasquez fight where he just... I mean, look, I understand that Velasquez is one of the top two or three heavyweights in the world. But he had nothing. Brown had nothing for Cain and just got run over. Then, you know, loses here. Just... That move has not been good for him, for his career. I think that's pretty safe to say at this point. The second round was, you know, Verdum landing some leg kicks, landing better punches, but not a whole lot. The third round was a lot of nothing. The scorecards for Verdum were 130-27, which is what I had, 129-27, and I have no problem with Verdum having a 10-8 first round. And I'll say this, I have no problem with a 10-8. Round one for Verdum. The other one was a 29-28 for Verdum. I don't know what round you give to Travis Brown from this fight. Genuinely, from what I saw last night, no clue which round you give him. Maybe the third? Maybe. But I don't... I didn't see it live. I was shocked when they read a couple of those scores and Brown got a round. Just shocked me. Yeah, look, even the UFC commentary was kind of burying Travis Brown here. And that's how you know when you're that bad, you know, Joe Rogan and Mike Goldberg are actually kind of calling you out for not being good anymore. You've gone pretty far down that. You've sunk pretty low. I mean, even, and look, Brian Stann, who is my favorite UFC commentator, one of my favorite things that brought in MMA ever came from, and I forget the specific event, but there was a, I believe, a Fight Pass exclusive event last year, headlined by Rose Namajunas and Paige VanZant. And throughout that event, if you haven't seen it, just rewatch the main event, listen to Brian Stann's commentary, because he has the most polite, informative, non-offensive, non-insulting way of burying someone when they're of an aspect of their game. Because, and as that fight wore on, Rose just kind of dominated VanZant using superior technique. VanZant constantly threw herself out of position, both on the feet and on the mat, and Rose just punished her for it. And Brian Stann very politely, very matter-of-factly, and very non-insultingly explained, here's where she's screwing up, here's where her technique is falling short, and here's what she should be doing. He put out there on Twitter during that fight that he used to spar, he's sparred on occasion in the past with Brendan Schaub. Schaub used to have really good footwork and awkward kicks that were tough to deal with. Now, awkward in this case is not derogatory. It means, you know, awkward angles, kicks you're not expecting that were powerful and difficult to deal with. And he closed that by saying, and none of those are present anymore. Just very matter of fact. And I mean, that's how far Travis Brown has fallen. Look, after the first round of this fight, it was not a good fight. The first round, just kind of watching Verdum comprehensively outclass Travis Brown is moderately interesting. The rest of it, no. After the fight, Edmund Tarverdian got into Fabricio Verdum's face and started screaming at him. Verdum responded to this with a left teep to the chest. Okay, a couple of things about this. One, I'm going to start with Tarverdian. Edmund Tarverdian is, how do I phrase this? A borderline charlatan. He has a grand total of one successful fighter that has come out of his camp, and I think Ronda Rousey would have been successful regardless of her gym. She succeeded in spite of Tarverdian, not because of him. He has not in any demonstrable way contributed to the success of any other fighter. I don't know what he is selling people to come train with him. I don't know what or how, but he's just not a good coach. There's a specific subset of the skills required for MMA that he might have value in teaching. A very specific subset of skills, not the overall game. His cornering is extraordinarily poor. It was between the second and third rounds, I think, he was screaming at Travis. He spent the time between rounds one and two screaming at Travis Brown. That Verdum was too slow, that he's got to get going. I mean, no technical advice, just a lot of profanity and motivational stuff. He screamed so much that his voice was going between rounds two and three. His attempts to yell at Travis Brown in between rounds on the stool sounded like someone going through puberty. I mean, I can't mimic it. That stereotypical, you know, teenager from The Simpsons, whose voice is always going up and down. It sounded like that, except it went a lot higher because it was cracked. I mean, just it was hilarious. If you haven't heard it, it has to be on the internet somewhere. That's one of those things that just has to exist for posterity's sake. Following, again, after that, before the decision was read, I believe, he goes to his opponent. Again, he's not the fighter, but you know, the opposing fighter and begin screaming profanities at him. You're supposed to be a professional corner man. And following a loss from to your following your fighter losing, your response is to lose your temper and verbally assault the other fighter. Edmund Tarverdian is not a good coach. He is not a good corner and has apparently no concept of professionalism. He should be banned from cornering UFC, from cornering fighters in the UFC. If that's the way you're going to conduct yourself, you should not be allowed to corner fighters. Period. Now, I don't like the I don't have anything good to say about how Fabricio Werdum handled this either. You're a professional fighter. You're a former UFC heavyweight champion. And your response to Edmund Tarverdian, you know, yelling at you is to kick him in the chest. Really? You couldn't have just... I mean, you're already physically the bigger man. You're already the more successful man. You couldn't have just been the bigger man in the moment and ignored the little twerp. Now, I will say this for Werdum. After that, he actually helped de-escalate things a little bit because one of his corner men was Renato Babalu Sobral. Now, that name may not mean anything to newer UFC fans. Sobral fought Chuck Liddell twice, lost both times, but this was to prime Chuck Liddell, was a very accomplished light heavyweight fighter in the UFC and in other organizations, former Strikeforce light heavyweight champion. Sean Comer and I have a running joke every now and then that gets brought up when we will chat either, you know, on a podcast or just over Facebook or what have you, about a certain level of crazy that is Brazilian crazy, because the Brazilians who are crazy are in their own category. They have to be. Vitor Belfort, Vanderlei Silva, guys who just will go crazy kind of at the drop of a hat, it seems. In some cases, this is violence. In some cases, it's quasi-delusional. There's a level of Brazilian crazy. Babalu Sobral is most certainly in that category. And if that event, if this altercation had escalated any further, he tried to get into the cage. And again, Sobral, he's crazy enough, that thing would have gone full-blown, like, Nashville brawl. For those of you who remember that from the Strikeforce event. And Werdum saw him trying to come into the cage and kind of went over and insisted he not come in and helped de-escalate a bit of that because Sobral's got a bit of the Brazilian crazy going on. And if you don't believe me, just look up his history as a fighter. Just there's a little bit of the crazy there. And that could have gotten a lot worse. And Werdum helped a little bit de-escalate it, and I appreciate that, even though, again, he helped escalate it in the first place. I have no patience for Tarverdian instigating that. I have very little patience for Fabricio Werdum responding to it. I agree with Jeff. Werdum should at a minimum be fined, if not suspended. Tarverdian should not be allowed to corner fighters until he can demonstrate a degree of professionalism on smaller cards. He should not be allowed to corner in the UFC anymore. And honestly, if any commission just banned him from cornering, I wouldn't object. That's just not the way to conduct yourself. I do not believe Fabricio Werdum will be getting the next title shot. I'm pretty sure that's Cain Velasquez because the UFC really wants him to be their heavyweight champion. They like him. They like the opportunities he opens up for them in various corners of Latin America, specifically Mexico, and they are going to do everything in their power, short of actually fixing a fight, to help him get there. Up next for... Sorry, my mind just blanked. Up next for Werdum is likely a rematch either with Junior Dos Santos or Alistair Overeem. I am okay with either of those. And Travis Brown needs to be basically on the prelims. He's just not good at this point. All right, we have a second caller this evening, area code 510. Thank you for calling in. And what's your question or comment, assuming this thing loads properly? And that just dropped. Jeez. So, again, area code 510. I apologize for that. If you would like to try again, I don't know if that was Blog Talk or your phone service. But by all means, if you would like to try again, hopefully the second time will be the charm. All right, next fight. One of the marquee fights for this evening. The professional debut of former wrestler CM Punk. He fought Mickey Gall. This fight was over very quickly. Mickey Gall took him down and submitted him in the first round. I don't have a whole lot to say here. I can't insult CM Punk terribly for this. I mean, look, he did not look good. However, here's my big qualification for this. This is a man who is 37, 38. He's nearly 40. Has no prior combat experience, combat sport experience, no competitive athletic background, no amateur jiu-jitsu tournaments, no background in wrestling, no amateur boxing, kickboxing events, no amateur MMA fights. And after 2 years of MMA training, made his professional debut. I can't say he looked any worse than any other fighter I have seen making their professional debut with, again, 2 years experience training. He didn't look any worse than anyone else I've seen under those qualifications. He was severely outmatched by Mickey Gall. Gall is a legitimate brown belt under, I don't know his jiu-jitsu coach. I know he trains with the Miller brothers in New Jersey, so he probably has it under their instructor. And I forget who it is. I believe it's one of the Gracies, but don't hold me to that. But he, again, a proven brown belt, has competed, had some amateur fights, had a 2-0 professional record. This went, when I say as expected, I've seen fights like this before. I have seen, and to a lot of people who only watch the UFC, you might be under the impression that the crappy fights from The Ultimate Fighter, if you still watch that show, are the basement level for mixed martial arts. They are not. Bad fights on The Ultimate Fighter are bad because both guys know enough to defend themselves, but not enough to necessarily attack effectively. If you want to see a fight like this one, and I've seen plenty, you don't look at the UFC. You don't look at their subsidiaries like Tough or even the Tough Latin America stuff. Find your regional MMA promotion, and you've probably got one. You may not know it, but you've probably got one somewhere around you. And watch some of their events. There's a couple around here in Utah, and when I say regional, I mean like Utah exclusive, that I have seen. Couple of UFC fighters have come out of one of them. Josh Berkman and Court McGee, both I saw on the regional circuit here. But they are the exception, and there's a lot of low-level guys making their debuts, guys with losing records, guys just trying to who want to try it out, you know, who are not. They're clearly not going to be professional elite mixed martial artists. What the type of stuff you saw out of this fight is what you see at regional shows on that level. Some of the prelims for an Invicta card for also. And that's not a knock on Invicta, mind you. They are okay with, on the preliminary portion of their card, having fighters who are making their debuts, who are 1-0, 2-0, 1-2. Moderately losing records, people still just getting started at the professional level. And that's not an insult to Invicta. They're okay doing that on that portion of their cards, and I'm okay. I'm okay watching it. They're okay doing it. There's not, again, not an insult. But that's what this is. That's what this looked like. This went exactly as expected. If you want to keep Punk around, we'll have to wait and see how some of the finances do for this one. If they spiked a buy rate because of him, he will probably appear again for the promotion. And I'm not in favor of that from a meritocracy standpoint. However, if you wanted to put him on the main card of a Fight Pass exclusive event to try and sell Fight Pass subscriptions, even if just for a month, there are plenty of guys from, again, the Tough Latin America series, the Tough Brazil series, who are not as old as he is, but in that same, you know, sub-5 professional fights. Some of them with even, you know, fewer amateur fights. There are surprisingly enough, a few guys of approximately his level that I would be okay with him fighting if you stuck him, you know, in the appropriate area. And if he spiked a big pay-per-view number, they're going to shove him back on pay-per-view most likely. And I don't like it, but I understand it. Mickey Gall, after the win, called out Sage Northcutt. I like that fight. I like that fight. They're both young guys. They're both kind of dynamic. Sage showed some pretty severe deficiencies in his jiu-jitsu game in his last fight that Gall could exploit. And we don't know pretty much anything about Mickey Gall. And seeing him fight a dynamic striker like Sage, a guy with, you know, some of Sage's takedown abilities, I like the fight. I think that's where they should go next. As for Punk, I understand Jeff's perspective about never wanting to see him fight again. I don't disagree necessarily. I certainly, from a meritocracy standpoint, from a preservation of the ethics of the UFC in the sense that this is where the best fight the best, I don't want him there. But I understand that they might want to keep him around. I don't like his chances even against, you know, guys without a whole lot of experience, but you know, such is life at the moment. And credit to Punk for actually getting in there and fighting. There's a level of respect that comes towards that, you know, that comes from me towards anyone who gets in there and engages in physical combat with another human being. That doesn't stop me from saying he's not a very good fighter at this point, or, you know, anyone else for that matter. All right, next up at bantamweight, the only fight that I had a very good night for this card in terms of predictions. I only missed one. I was only wrong about the first prelim of the night. Everything else I was right about. The only one I'm going to pat myself on the back over is this one, because Jimmy Rivera comprehensively defeated Uriah Faber. And I called that. And I feel good about that one. This fight was all Jimmy Rivera. He won all three rounds decisively. I can't see any logic for giving Faber not just a whole round. I don't think there's a contiguous stretch of 60 seconds could score for Uriah Faber in that fight. This was Jimmy Rivera's coming out party. This was Jimmy Rivera on the big stage against a big opponent and showing the world that, no, I am very good. He outstruck Faber. He was able to bait Faber's punches and then land counters. His leg kicks were very good. He never let Faber get close to taking him down. Just, again, from start to finish, this was Jimmy Rivera's fight. I felt, again, I called that. I want to mention a little bit why. Uriah Faber is still, I think he's still a very good fighter. Uriah Faber has been a fixture of the featherweight and bantamweight divisions. He was the standard bearer for those sub-155 weight divisions. He was expertly marketed in the early days of the WEC promotion. And he's, look, my dislike of him person is utterly irrelevant to my analysis of him as a fighter and his importance to the history of the sport. But he's 37. And he's 37, not at heavyweight. You know, at heavyweight and light heavyweight, you can have longer careers because of the quality of opposition. He's a 37-year-old successful fighter at bantamweight, where speed and technique and reflexes are critical. They're not everything, but they are critical skills. And look, your physical athletic prime ends at around 32. For him to be as successful as he has been at his age in those division, bantamweight specifically, is tremendous. Cannot be overstated. I mean, this was the first time he ever lost a 3-round fight in his entire career. And Faber's got almost 50 fights. First time he's ever lost a 3-round fight. His only other non-title loss was a 5-rounder to Frankie Edgar. And, you know, Frankie Edgar is very good. This is the first losing streak of his professional career. Tremendous. You know, that doesn't happen by accident. Uriah Faber's very, very good. He's just two things. He's physically slipping a little bit, and at 37, that shouldn't shock anybody. And the gap in skill that he used to have over the average fighter in his weight class has diminished considerably. He's slowed down, and the general level of talent has come up a lot. And I think the very top of the division is just starting to pass him by a little bit. He's still very good. I still think he's a top 10 bantamweight. He still can compete and probably beat the majority of that division. But the very best guys are going to be able to start passing him by. And I felt Jimmy Rivera was one of those guys. I thought he was underrated at number 12. I thought that was below where he should be in the division. And he got his big win. I don't know where he goes from here. I don't know specifically who he fights next. Brian Caraway wouldn't maybe be the worst fight in the world to match him up with. Possibly Aljamain Sterling, but, you know, one of those top guys. I'd be very interested to see what he does against them. And Jimmy Rivera is just a very good fighter. It was a good fight. And kicking off the main card, Jessica Andrade ran over Joanne Calderwood and submitted her with a guillotine choke in the first round. I picked Andrade. I did not expect this fight to be as one-sided as it was. Joanne Calderwood was somewhat successful fighting at distance, but anytime Andrade got close, she was unloading with hooks to the body and head. I knew Andrade would be better on the mat. I did not expect her to be that much better. As soon as she took Calderwood down, she was passing her guard like it was nothing. And just passing, punching, elbowing. It was borderline unfair. I mean, the discrepancy in skill at that point was that distinct. Calderwood finally tried to get up, caught in the choke. Andrade is very good. She should fight a top 5 strawweight next. Rose Namajunas, Carla Esparza, Claudia Gadelha. I don't know if they train. I have to double check, see if they train together or not, but someone like that. Andrade could be fighting for the belt, and I love that fight. The violence that she and Johanna Jędrzejczyk would bring to each other would be worth pay-per-view alone. I mean, that's, if you like the violence, those two ladies bring it. She's got Andrade has areas of her game that match up very favorably against Johanna. The way she fights on the ground is less positional than Gadela's was, much more interested in striking. And that could be an issue for Joanna. Andrade fights very well in the clinch. She's a very aggressive fighter. Now, again, some of that plays into Joanna's strengths. But that – I wouldn't – look, if they make that fight, don't count out Andrade. That's all I'm saying. Don't count her out at all. All right, on the prelims, Betch Kohea defeated Jessica Eye via split decision. Not a great fight. Jessica Eye, look, the UFC rankings are kind of a mess. The fact that Eye, who was on a three-fight losing streak, was still the number 10 bantamweight contender is indicative of the flaws within it. Kohea beat her. Not a good fight. Middleweight Brad Tavares defeated Caio Magalhães via split decision. There was a 29-28 for Magalhães, a 29-28 for Tavares, and a 30-27 for Tavares. Believe it or not, I'm okay with all of those scores. Normally, the 30-27 and something like that would make me, you know, kind of raise an eyebrow, and I certainly gave Magalhães the first round. But all three rounds were competitive. All three rounds were close. So if you just wound up leaning Tavares' way on all three of them, I don't think it's wrong. Nick Lentz TKO'd Michael McBride in the second round. McBride was a late notice replacement for Mirbek Taisimov. Just didn't really have anything for Lentz. Nick Lentz is very good, and a short notice fight against him, that was always going to be rough. I actually really wanted to see Lentz fight Taisimov. I'm pretty high on Mirbek Taisimov, guys, for those of you who don't know. Lentz continues to call out BJ Penn. I'm okay with that if they make that fight. I don't think Penn's getting past Ricardo Lamas, but we'll deal with that when we come to it. Lightweight Drew Dober defeated Jason Gonzalez via TKO in the first round. Pretty good brawling from Dober, who just slung enough punches in there to wobble Gonzalez and follow up. And on the fight pass portion of the prelims, Yancy Medeiros submitted Sean Spencer in the second round with a rear naked choke. Not a bad night of fights. A few of them weren't very good, but there were some pretty good ones in that, so no complaints. Thank you to everyone who stopped by, who followed along with my live coverage. Much appreciated. There were a lot of you. A lot of the CM Punk fans showed up for this one. This one might have actually been a record in terms of the amount of comments I got. It's this or the last card featuring Conor McGregor. And I want to say this publicly. I was worried about this event in the comments board. I was terrified that we were going to, and I don't mean to insult the wrestling board at all when I say this, but the wrestling board for, the average coverage for, a Monday Night Raw, a WWE pay-per-view, there's a significant portion of the comments board that is devoted to trolling, to flame wars, personal insults, a fair amount of profanity, just things like that. And look, the guys over there that do it, I imagine they have a good time with it, and I don't mean this as an insult. That is not what I to see in the comments section for my coverage. I have no control over this. I am not a moderator, guys. I am a contributor. I can upvote, I can downvote, I can comment. That's the total of that. That's the extent of my power. And you guys, both the wrestling fans who came over just for this event and the regular group of readers and commenters, you didn't do that. I mean, there were a couple of, exchanges that were a little trolly, but not very. There were very few instances of personal insults. There were no long strings of profanity. The people who came up to CCM Punk lose got their bit of schadenfreude, and there were a few discussions and disagreements, particularly stemming from him and that whole scenario. Guys, expressing their respect, their sadness over seeing him lose. Guys rejoicing in his loss, and your individual I certainly have fighters that I have cheered when they lost. I'm not going to pretend that I don't. But even when you guys disagreed, you didn't insult each other. Generally, there were a couple of exchanges, and that's in this case, that was actually shooting under par from what I was expecting. You disagreed, you expressed it, you talked about it, you generally avoided insults and childishness, and I was very surprised by all that, and I am supremely grateful. And again, I can't craft that in the sense that I can't, you know, remove comments. All I can do is, again, upvote, downvote, and I can type a response or an opinion. That's it. I am grateful to the usuals who and the regulars for talking with, you know, the newcomers, for expressing opinions, be they agreeing or disagreeing, in an intelligent and adult manner. I sincerely thank all the first timers or the once in a while guys who showed up just for the novelty of this, contributing in a meaningful way, for not engaging again in flame wars, trolling, childishness, things of that nature. I was really worried that we were going to get, you know, just a bunch of profanity and insults, and that wasn't what happened. We had some discussions that, you know, maybe got a little bit heated, a little bit insulting at times, but nothing near what I was afraid was going to happen. Thank you to everyone who read along, who contributed in a meaningful way. Just means the world to me that in my little corner of the internet, we get people actually engaging with one another and not, again, just insulting or demeaning or flaming or trolling or anything like that. I can't express enough my gratitude to all of you for, you know, the community and for the way you all conduct yourselves on a regular basis. So thank you to everyone for making the comment zone in the comment section in the MMA zone what it is. And again, I'm routinely impressed by how you all conduct yourselves and interact with each other on a, you know, consequence-free portion of the internet. So thank you all for that tremendously. Means a lot. I am never worried about linking my work and having to post a disclaimer about avoid the comment section because of, you know, I've seen the comment sections in other corners of the internet, guys, not just on 411 Mania, but a lot of other places. And I don't, and look, personally, I would take the, you know, average comment count that I get of sub 100 being intelligent, respectful guys over 1,000 guys flaming and trolling and yelling at each other. Thank you also very much for that. All right. Next week, because we're still rolling, UFC Fight Night 94, Johnson versus Poirier. This is it's a fight night. It's the UFC's debut in the city of Hidalgo. There's some good fights here. Main event is Dustin Poirier and Michael Johnson. I reserve the right to change my mind about this pick after I study a little bit more tape, do a little more research. Dustin Poirier has been phenomenal since moving up to lightweight. 4-0, three of them finishes. He knocked out Carlos Diego Fajeya. He knocked out Yancy Medeiros. He knocked out Bobby Green. Dominated Joseph Duffy. The man has looked superb since moving up to lightweight from featherweight. On the other end, you got Michael Johnson, who's been a top 5, top 10 guy, who's on a 2-fight losing streak. Now, the split decision loss to Beneil Dariush arguably should have gone his way. I don't argue that position. I think I scored it for Johnson when I was scoring it live. And then he lost clearly to Nate Diaz. He needs a win in the worst way. Both these guys are well-rounded fighters. They're both southpaws, which could come into play. Michael Johnson is a slightly better wrestler, but I believe Poirier is the better overall grappler. Take that how you will. They both are good strikers. Just a really good fight on paper here. I'm leaning towards Dustin Poirier. The man's looked superb recently. He's finally got his boxing skills up to kind of where they need to be. His defense is better than it's been. His grappling is very good. It's a perpetually overlooked section of his game because he kind of likes brawling a little bit. Yeah, I got Poirier here. This will be a good fight, though, and don't be shocked if Johnson takes it, but I got Poirier. All right, in the co-main event, middleweight fight between Uriah Hall and Derek Brunson. Uriah Hall, who the UFC desperately wants to be better than he is. He's coming off of a unanimous decision loss to Robert Whittaker. That fight was pretty much all Whittaker all the time. Prior to that, he knocked out Gegard Mousasi in the second round, but if you remember that fight, and I do, Mousasi owned him in the first round and then ducked into a... Mousasi made a poor decision to duck in... as I imagine he was trying to duck a wheel kick, but he wound up ducking into a back kick to the that wound up going to his face. That spawned the finishing sequence, but again, if you actually watched the fight and you kind of remember it, it was not a good performance from Uriah Hall. He's taking on Derek Brunson. Now, Derek Brunson is on a 4-fight winning streak. His only UFC loss is to Yoel Romero. The loss prior to that was relevant was he got knocked out by Ronaldo Jacare Souza. You know, Jacare, I think, is the best middleweight in the world. I actually have Souza ranked at number one right now above, you know, Michael Bisping and Luke Rockhold and Chris Weidman, and I think he's the best. Again, on a 4-fight winning streak, beat Lorenz Larkin, Ed Herman, Sam Alvey, and Ron Carnero. This is a tough one. Uriah Hall has some devastating power. He's also wild with it. Wild is not the right word. He's not reckless. He relies on spinning techniques and some of the unorthodox stuff that you don't see in traditional MMA to be very effective. But when he gets it going, he hurts people. He hurts them pretty badly. The problem I see for him here is twofold. One, Uriah Hall is a bit of a head case. He struggles to pull the trigger. He struggles when pressured. Derek Brunson is a pressure fighter. Brunson's not afraid to throw hands, hits pretty hard, and Brunson will have a substantial wrestling advantage. And if Brunson gets Hall down, he's going to unload on him. And that's kind of how I see this going. Brunson's going to close distance. He's going to take him down. He's going to beat him up from top position. And Uriah Hall will just... he's just got a bad habit of crumbling a bit under pressure. Both, you know, the metaphorical pressure of, you know, being in this spot and the literal pressure of the other guy coming at him. I like Brunson here. Again, Hall has the power to certainly win this fight, and I won't be shocked if he wins, but Brunson's in a very good place, and Hall's just too inconsistent for me to pick here. All right, at lightweight, this was supposed to be a fight between Evan Dunham and Abel Trujillo, which I would have loved. Trujillo has big power, bit of a brawler. Dunham, more technical striking, but better on the mat, and Trujillo's grappling has some weaknesses. He's got good takedown defense, but once you get him engaged in, you know, scrambles or on the mat, that's where he's a little bit weaker. Would have loved that fight. Trujillo had to pull out of this fight, some kind of injury. He was replaced by Rick Glenn, who is a former World Series of Fighting featherweight champion. I've seen a few of Rick Glenn's fights. I think I covered one of them. He was on one of the World Series of Fighting events that I've covered for the site. I'm still going with Dunham. Glenn's not a pushover, but Dunham seems to have finally kind of found himself as a fighter on a 3-fight winning streak. His win over Ross Pearson and his win over Joe Lozon, those were impressive wins. Just the way he dominated Joe Lozon, and Ross Pearson, impressive. I would have picked him over Trujillo, actually, and, you know, here over a late-notice replacement who normally fights at 145, yeah, I got Dunham. At bantamweight, Alejandro Perez fights Albert Morales. I feel like I should know Morales, but he is escaping me. Perez has fought for the UFC. He won the Ultimate Fighter Latin America, I believe season one. I forget which one, but lost to Patrick Williams, but bounced back. Scott Jorgensen with that ankle injury. Beat Ian Entwistle. I'm going to see if Morales has fought for the UFC before, because I just need to be sure about this. Let's see here. Where are you? There you are. Albert Morales. Morales is 6-0. No, this is his UFC debut. He's fought in the World Series of Fighting and RFA before, as well as Bellator. Two Bellator appearances. I'm going with Perez, but I won't be shocked if... I won't be shocked at all if Morales pulls this one off, but I'm going with Perez. At welterweight, Ron Carnero fights Kenny Robertson. Robertson has not fought since July of last year. It's been over a year. He lost a split decision to Ben Saunders. I seem to recall thinking that went his way. The UFC for a while. Carnero, longtime MMA veteran. Ran over Mark Munoz, but lost to Derek Brunson. I like Carnero's chances there with his jiu-jitsu skills, but Robertson's pretty solid. And kicking off the main card at lightweight, Chris Wade will fight Islam Makhachev. Chris Wade is pretty good. He's coming off of that loss to Rustam Khabilov, but you know, Rustam Khabilov is very good. He was on a pretty good winning streak before that. Makhachev has fought for the UFC before, twice. Beat Leo Kunz, got knocked out by Adriano Martins. I'll go with Chris Wade there, but... Makhachev is not someone you want to sleep on. All right, on the prelims, Gabriel Benitez fights Sam Cecilia. I will take Sam Cecilia there. Augusto Montaño fights Bilal Muhammad. I seem to recall Muhammad fought Alan Joban on short notice. I remember that fight. Really good fight, and I remember thinking that I wanted to see Muhammad with a full camp under his belt because... he fought Alan Joban on short notice, and he brought the fight to Joban on multiple occasions. Montaño lost to Cathal Pendred. I'm actually going to go with Bilal Muhammad there. Kind of a that might be my underdog pick, but I'm going with Muhammad. At bantamweight, Jose Alberto Quinonez will fight Joey Gomez. I'm going to briefly check these two. Montaño. Quinonez. Lost the Ultimate Fighter Latin America Season 2, I believe, to Alejandro Perez. He rebounded by beating Leandro Morales. Fighting Joey Gomez, who I believe is making his UFC debut. Nope, he got knocked out by Rob Font. Okay. Oh, I remember that fight. That was a good fight. Gomez didn't look bad. I'm actually going to go with Gomez in that one. Not sure about that one, but I'll go with Gomez. All right, next up, at welterweight, Eric Montaño will fight Randy Brown. I am having a minor discrepancy here. Sherdog has a different fight listed, a fight between Antonio Carlos Jr. and Leonardo Gumarais that I am not seeing here on my other event. We'll see how that plays out. Anyway, Eric Montaño and Randy Brown. Montano won his UFC debut, a split decision over Enrique Marin. Brown, is he one of those guys that was found and looking for a fight? Yes, he was, because he lost to Michael Graves. He beat Matt Dwyer, then lost to Michael Graves, but I seem to recall he was found on Dana White's Looking for a Fight show. Go with Montano there. And kicking everything off, a featherweight fight between Chaz Skelly and Maximo Blanco. Skelly lost to Darren Elkins, but was on a 4-fight winning streak before that. Pretty good guy. Maximo Blanco lost to Luke Sanders. Blanco's a bit wild for my take. I'll take Chaz Skelly, actually. I think he'll get the takedown. I think he'll take that one home. All right. So, again, next Saturday, I will have live coverage of that event in the MMA Zone of 411mania.com. So stop by and say hello. I appreciate it. I believe that's everything for me. Is there any news this week that kind of stuck out? Apart from a lot of the randomness that took place around UFC 203, I don't have anything off the top of my head. So we're going to go ahead and close that out. I will be back next week. Jeff Harris will be back next week. Do I have anything to plug? Real briefly. It is Alan Moore month on the Radulich and Broadcasting Network. They will be examining, and I'll be participating in a couple of these, Alan Moore's graphic novel source material versus the film adaptations of such. They got started with a review of Watchmen, both the comic and the film. Up this week, I believe, is the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Towards the end, I will be participating in both the V for Vendetta and From Hell episodes, so you can find me on those later in the month. Not this Tuesday, but next Tuesday, Mark Radulich and I are back reviewing movies. We'll be reviewing the Magnificent Seven remake, which ought to be interesting. So stop by and say hello. So go ahead and give a listen to that when it goes live. Jeff Harris has movie reviews in the Movies TV Zone of 411mania.com. You should always read them. He does a very good job. I don't know what he'll be writing about this week in the MMA Zone, but again, Jeff's usually, his stuff is worth reading. I don't think I'll be writing anything this week, but again, live coverage next Saturday and next Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time again. Be right back here to review Fight Night 94, and we will be previewing UFC Fight Night 95, which I believe is a Fight Pass. It's on Fox Sports 1. That event is headlined by Invicta FC featherweight champion Christiane Cyborg Justino. Her second UFC fight, again at a catch weight of 145 pounds against Lena Landsberg. Also on that fight, former bantamweight champion Henan Barão fights Felipe Nova at featherweight. Felipe Nova sucks. Barão ought to run him over. Heavyweight fight between Roy Nelson and Antonio Bigfoot Silva. Gilbert Burns is on that card. That's a good card. Man, I'm just getting a good look at it now. That's a really good card. So next week we'll be previewing all of that. I hope to see you all then. Until then, for Jeff Harris, who is absent, I'm Robert Winfrey. Thank you all again for listening. Please continue to be well, be safe, and behave.